Hey everybody, welcome to Surface Level, creating a community where Black and queer folks are fearless in thought and curious at heart. I'm one of your hosts, Tony, and today, Jordan, Damon, and I are discussing Black queer representation in media. Do we still think being clockable stifles personal and professional opportunities? How has self-image, colorism, and femininity impacted visibility? This is P-Valley. All right, y'all, so guess where we're going today?
Down in the pank?
We're going down in the valley where the girls get naked.
Oh, well, correct me.
I'm correct you now, because guess who our guest is? It's none other than actor and choreographer Nico Annan. Now, you may have seen him on hit shows like All of Us, Shameless, and Claws. And if you haven't seen him there, you likely saw him or know him from his portrayal of Uncle Clifford on the Starz hit show P-Valley. And season 2 is currently snatching my wig. So y'all get ready to go down in the pink, as Jordan said, because today we're welcoming Nico Annan to our Surface Level family.
What's up, y'all?
Hey. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yes.
Ow. Oh, and for our viewers, Damon's not with us in the studio here. You know, work comes first. This is a passion project, but Mother's in Chicago doing her thing.
Behind God's back.
Behind God's back. So to start us off today, I wanted to bring a little bit of the show to the Surface Level table and studio. And I want to play a game to start off with called Think Like Uncle Clifford.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
So I'm going to give you a few scenarios and you're going to have to think like Uncle Clifford. And I'm going to let Damon, myself, and Jordan answer first and then see what Nico says how Uncle Clifford would respond.
Okay.
So you and your...
This is a good way to get to know one another. You just warm up the room and all the things, right?
This is an amazing way to get to know one another. You know, a little icebreaker moment. So, you and your bestie switch things up and go to Germany for Berlin Pride. Y'all meet a few local baddies at the club who speak just enough English to get by and want to come kick it at your Airbnb after for a nightcap. Which rule would Uncle Clifford remind you of in this situation? Rule number 67, contrary to Chuckalisa belief, ain't no hoes in this house. Or rule number 2, always know where the exits in this bitch is, because you never know when you got to turn a window into a door. It's Jordan, what would you say?
It's definitely the second one.
Okay.
Because you know, you can have your fun, but like, don't be dumb as hell, you know what I mean? Like, make sure that you're like, you have it figured out, you're thinking ahead.
Yeah,
be ahead of the narrative.
Yeah, you gotta have that exit strategy.
Exactly.
Damon, what would you say?
I'm saying number 2. You know, I believe the girls steal, kill, and destroy. So I always got to have
get out of
here. You said kill and destroy.
Right. We got to work on your selection process.
Well, listen, the girls do steal.
Well, listen. No. You know what? I have to say number 2 as well, just because, like Damon says, do they steal? We got to be careful now. So, Nico, how would Uncle Clifford, how would Uncle Clifford answer? What rule would Uncle Clifford invoke in this scenario?
I think she definitely would go with the second option that you had.
Yes.
What's the number that you said?
Rule number 2, always know where the exits in this bitch is, because you never know when you got to turn a window into a door.
Okay. A door. Mm-hmm. That's good that you said that, though, because sometimes people don't really understand what that means in terms of windows and doors. And I'm like, there's always an exit in this thing, whether it's life, whether it's a situation, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a financial thing.
Yes.
Just keep your options open.
Keep your options open.
Always.
Yeah. Okay. So your good sis just broke up with her man and she's going through with child. And although nobody knows or knew exactly how he made his money, he was a good man, Savannah. Which rule would Uncle Clifford remind us of in this situation? Rule number 24.5, no crying at the pank. Or rule number 54, we don't do tax evasion.
Listen.
Damon, let's go with you first.
I'm going to go with we don't do tax evasion. You don't fuck with the IRS, Joe.
Hey,
Jordan?
I would say rule number 1, ain't no crying at the bank.
Okay.
Because that's like a blanket thing of just like, you know, suck it up and move on. You didn't even know where the money was coming from.
I'm going to have to agree with you on that and put on my Uncle Clifford hat, because I think Uncle Clifford would say, ain't no crying at the paint. Suck it up, bitch.
24.5. That is one that goes across the board. That works for a lot of things. Yes. You're right on that. Like, it works for a lot of things. Like, you know, suck it up. You know what you got yourself into.
Right.
Pull yourself up by your, put your big girl panties on and keep it moving.
Keep it moving.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So it is the last week of Pride Month and we are in New York City. So you and your Judies want to go out with a bang. So y'all pumped to Deviant, the popping circuit party for the black and brown girls. Y'all get white girl wasted and the hosts call y'all to the stage for an epic sex siren battle. Which rule would Uncle Clifford remind you of in this situation? Rule number one, let that stage be a stepping stone, not your tombstone. Or rule number 55.99, even when there ain't no money raining, dance like tonight's your last night. Jordan?
I'm going to say the first one, make sure that that's your stage, not the tombstone.
Let that stage be a stepping stone, not a tombstone.
Right, because I'm just thinking about personally, it probably would be my tombstone if I had to go up at a circuit party and perform.
Why?
Jordan would literally I would actually
pass out, actually.
From your nerves or from like doing like incredible tricks and things like
No, from my nerves. Actually, no. I actually have a secret talent of like coming alive on the stage. But like, it's been a while. It's been years.
Okay. So you just couldn't use like the silicone and the water and the slip and all the latex and stuff like that?
Not in front of a show. Not in front of an audience.
Not in front of an audience. You don't get shy. All right now.
Yeah.
Oh, please.
Damone, what about you? What would Uncle Clifford say?
What was the second one?
The second one was, even when there ain't no money raining, dance like tonight's your last night. That one?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm gonna have to agree. I think Uncle Clifford would say you get up on stage and you make it happen, because even if ain't no money raining, dance like tonight is your last night.
Why?
Well, I think that, you know, we ain't gonna be camera shy around here. We're not gonna let the stage be our tombstone. It is a stepping stone, but you got to get up there and perform, not embarrass the group. Come alive.
That is very true.
All right.
See, now who really is Beyonce in this thing? Okay. Someone's trying to show out.
Okay.
For dear life.
So listen to this. You and your crew are in Vegas and y'all want to get into some things that stay in Vegas. So you hit the gay club where the homies each find a little dancer to take to the back room. For some privacy. Sure, Piranha. Okay. We love that. We've been there. However, Murphy's Law strikes. And so y'all didn't stop for cash. The ATM is broke and the dancers don't play that. Which rule would Uncle Clifford remind you of in this situation? Rule number 57, no coins in the G-string, only dollars. Or would she invoke this mantra? Always remember, closed legs still get fed.
This will be very interesting coming with your performance shyness.
Yes, come on, Jordan.
I'm trying to still unpack what the second option means to me.
Don't matter. Really?
Yeah.
That closed leg still get fed? That's what the rule is.
That is it.
Let's go with the second one.
Always remember, closed legs still get fed.
Let's go with the second one.
Damone, what about you?
I'm gonna go with the ain't no coins in the. Who wants to give people quarters?
Ain't no coins in the G-string.
Not the girls coming up with a bag of nickels.
Only dollars.
They coming up with a bag of nickels. You know that's another situation.
It ain't cute.
That's right.
I'm gonna go with, because it does mean so many things, Jordan. So I see why you had a hard time figuring out what it means for you. But always remember, closed legs still get fed.
What is that gonna do for y'all? Y'all both sat up here and said closed legs still get fed, but we at a club. They ain't got the ATM is broke. What is your closed legs gonna do?
I imagine that there's other parts of your body that can make things work for you that aren't around your legs.
Right, but they don't have any money. The ATM was broken, so they couldn't get any money is what you said, right?
That is what I said.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes that is the money. That is the currency.
What?
The experience?
Outside of your... Like,
bitch,
y'all are not working at my fucking club.
Not us getting kicked out.
Where's your money coming from for tip out? Where's your money coming from to pay the DJ?
You're fired.
To pay the bottle girls? You know. And for, you gotta tip the bottle girls. You gotta tip the bartender. You gotta pay the DJ.
I'm good for it.
The fuck you eat? Good night, Big L. Come take this one away.
Oh my God.
You know, it's always the pretty Ricky one. Okay. Always the pretty Ricky one.
Trying to get over on that face card. So, Nico, for you, because we ask this to every guest, and it's something that it's our hashtag for the show, hashtag stay curious. We want to know, what are you curious about?
I was about to say, since you asking everybody, don't be dipping that thing over here with me. Hold on now. What am I curious about, like, in life?
It don't matter. Just generally?
I am curious, what's coming to me right now is like, how crazy is this summer after like being outside? What is this going to be like? Ooh. I'm curious to see like what that's like. I'm really in a space of like experiencing life in general, like outside the pink now, because filming in the pandemic, having lived in a pandemic and waiting to film and then filming in it. So I've been in these bubbles, you know, of like either in my apartment, because I was stuck here in New York when everything shut down. I was finishing a show at the Signature Theater, Hot Wing King. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, yo, 2 weeks, it's all good, you know.
Right.
And then here we were 3 months later. And then somebody actually in the building that I was staying in, he jumped.
Wow.
Yeah, he jumped off the roof and was like, yo, I need to be seen. I'm tired. He couldn't take it. And it was very telling. It was very, very, very telling. And I remember being in the apartment, and I had just, you know, like, found a new little delivery guy, you know what I'm saying, that was bringing my flour. And I was just like, what's happening? And I was just dancing to some music, and I saw this thing passed the window, and I thought it was a bird.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like, that was a little big for a bird. Well, okay. I didn't pay no attention.
Right.
Kept going. Next thing I know, my homeboy called me. He was staying downstairs on like the 21st floor or something like that. Him and his girlfriend, and they were coming back from the supermarket, and they were like, Nico, you all right? You all right? And I was like, yeah, what's going on? I heard sirens, blah, 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 blah. Splatter. It was the pink splatter at the bottom.
Wow.
So God rest his soul. But I knew then I had to get out.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, all right, I gotta go. So I went back home to LA, and then I was in that bubble there until it was time to film. Left that bubble and went to Atlanta and was down there filming, because it took us 10 months, you know, to film the season because of COVID and the delays and making sure that no one got sick and all that stuff. So now we out. Outside. So I just want to see what that is going to be like. I'm very curious about that. I want, you know, how many more tests you're going to have to take. I'm curious. People are used to taking tests now, right?
Yeah.
And it's very different. I think it's, I said this, I'm interested to see what y'all feel about this. Wow. Everybody's been taking COVID tests and stuff like that. I don't know how much y'all do, but I was taking COVID tests like every day.
Right? Okay.
Just because of work and PCRs and all that other kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, so are people now going to take HIV tests more? Are people going to take STD tests more? Like, is the same stigma of testing going to be the thing? Or, like, are people going to be more open to it? So I'm also curious about that.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. And that's something that is very, you know, it's food for thought.
Yeah.
And we'll see. We'll see how that
changes. We hope, you know.
Like, right. So today, as I mentioned in the opening, we're going to be talking about Black queer representation in media as it relates to self-image, colorism, femininity, all that good stuff. And I want to start here because I was looking at an article on the Washington Post.
All right, y'all, the glasses went on.
Glasses are gone, so it's serious business. This is vital information. And so it said that the portrayal of Black queer men on television, it changed in the 90s for three reasons. One, young adult children of the white audiences in the 70s were more willing to consume gay characters. Two, the expansion of cable allowed for narrower targeting. And three, medical advances shifted for AIDS and it changed the stigma just a little bit. And so black gay representation started to increase just a bit, and it started with, really with it in Living Color with one of the sketches that they did was called Men
Hated
On.
It.
Yes, it's called Men On. So they were cultural critics. It was Damon Wayans and Men on Film. It was Damon Wayans and David Alan Greer, and they would review whatever it was, you know, films and different things, and then they would give it maybe two snaps up. Or they would read it, hated it, so.
Or a snap and a Z.
A little snap and a Z for Mation. And it was everything hilarious.
Look at y'all, y'all remember that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We the same age.
Real black don't cry.
Hold on, but we the same. I we the same age group.
Okay. We all came up together.
That's good. Yeah. Yes, we did.
So let's start here because discrimination has taught us that in order to be valid at what you do, you're gay can't be clockable, no matter what the industry is that you work in. Mm-hmm. And you know, we grew up in a time where you had to, like in your case, Nico, you had to be able to play straight. And so I want to know how prevalent is that idea present day? Who wants to start?
I can give some context to that. I mean, I think that in my experience, I think that society is a little bit more advanced. I think that society is becoming okay with knowing that people are gay. Mm-hmm. But I do still think that, and we talked about this earlier in the season, I do still think that femphobia is super like real. And I'm just thinking about just very recently just going on Twitter and seeing Lil Nas X sort of voice his grievances about not getting a single nomination from the BET Awards. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's no denying that he has released some of the most just culturally relevant music in the last year. So to see him sort of just like absent from the nomination slate was also kind of like an eyebrow raise for me. But he mentioned that, you know, Frank Ocean will still get the respect of BET. Tyler, the Creator, will still get the respect from BET. And he said that queer men get more respect when they display less feminine traits. And I think it's very real. I think that, you know, society's moving into a place where they are putting out a message gradually, slowly, that we should be more inclusive. But mm-hmm. I still think that that inclusion has caveats. It's not always extended to men who are a little bit further on the feminine spectrum. So while I still feel like there's progress, I still feel like there's a lot of discrimination against feminine presenting queer men.
Absolutely. Nico?
Do I agree?
I mean, I can speak. I mean, just in your experience, like, and you work in a completely different industry than us. And when it comes to being clockable and booking jobs and gigs, and if people could clock that you were anything near feminine or gay or what have you, that sort of limits the doors you can walk in. And yeah. Is that still prevalent today? Is it still as prevalent? Is it changing? Has it evolved?
It has evolved, I think, into a greater conversation.
Okay.
You know, not to get too deep, but are we staying on the surface or are we going deep?
Well, we like
we're going beyond the surface level.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, for me, for example, like, I definitely was trained, like, I went to Purchase, mm-hmm. The Conservatory of Purchase, upstate New York, or Westchester, New York. That was for undergrad. And there was huge conversations. I'll never forget, like, I had this voice teacher, David Wells, that gave me this Jacobian monologue, you know, we all had to do for our juries. And you had to, it was not Shakespeare, but it was a classical text. And he had directed all of the voice students in his version of what this could be. Mm-hmm. So I had like this sonnet, and he encouraged me to use more of my natural self and my sense of humor and, let's just say, my flamboyance, so to speak. And there was this, and it went off without a hitch. It was great. I felt great. It unlocked some things in me as an artist to be able to use, you know, I really got to where I am right now as an actor because of instructors like him that kind of encouraged me to dive into my femininity, that encouraged me to be my full self. But there was this huge conversation and like this uproar in amongst the faculty of like, you know, oh, he's never going to work if he does this. Like, what are you doing? Why, you know, and they were coming at me directly, not coming at the professor who directed the scenes, but they were coming to me as if this was my choice. And I thought that that was interesting because my choice was to do what I always knew to do, is to play straight or to be unclockable. And then you fast forward to where I am now playing a non-binary character like Uncle Clifford, and I'm having conversations with people that are like, oh, I never saw you as Uncle Clifford. You know, you're so masculine and you're so that, and I'm like, y'all don't know what the fuck y'all talking about.
Period.
That's how I really feel.
Yeah.
I am a man. I am a black gay man. And my blackness is not based on my femininity or my masculinity. My artistry is my art. I transform. I play roles that I want to play. That's the point of being an actor.
Yep. Right.
You know, I can transform and be anything I want to be and play those roles fully and completely. I think sometimes people get caught up in feminine and masculine, but I think it's interesting. I don't know if it's my age. I don't know. I definitely know that when I was in my 20s, the flamboyance was much more, but that was, I don't think that was, it wasn't bent wrist flamboyance. It was youth. Mm-hmm. It was excitement. It was like naivete. Mm-hmm. It was energy. You know what I'm saying? Like I heard a song, like I remember in high school or whatever, like If I'm Every Woman, Whitney or Shaka came on, I was stopping at a red light in Detroit and jumping out, like, and you know, doing it, you know what I'm saying? We was like, you know, they was like, Nico, get the fuck in the car, get in the car, you know? But like, that was fun to me. Now I can still turn up to the same music, but I may not stop at the red light and get out, you know?
Yeah.
But so I think that we have come a long way, but I think that people always want to have something to say.
Absolutely.
So yeah. To me, I say to all my femme boys, my femme girls, or masculine girls and masculine men, do you?
Mm-hmm.
I say, do you? And I feel that people will catch up. I feel like when you walk in a level of authenticity,
mm-hmm.
people who are going to be drawn to you will be drawn to you exactly. regardless. And that is for a job interview. That is for a role. Yeah,
no, that's 100% because, you know, Jordan, Damon and I work in like traditional corporate environments. And so in the beginning, we've been in our careers at least a decade, a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started, it was very much, you know, you had to assimilate, you had to repress who you were a little bit, you had to blend in. And the more I think we've come into ourselves, like present day, I walk in to the office exactly as who I am, mm-hmm. and it's received as such. And like you said, people gravitate to people who can be authentically mm-hmm. them. It's so beautiful. It wasn't always the case, but true. I'm so happy that I can like give whatever I want to give. I can give my feminine side. I can give my masculine side, because you're still not gonna fuck with me either way.
That part.
So yeah, Damon, do you have anything to add?
That you kind of get to a place where you have to ask yourself, like, how much of myself am I willing to give or bend or give up to like make other people happy?
Mm-hmm.
Because like at the end of the day, like how much joy is that really going to bring you? And I think parts of it will be people standing up in the shit that's them, that feels most honest, that feels most true, whether as an artist or someone running some branch of a corporate organization. And it will, like to Tony's point, you'll succeed when it's for you.
Yeah,
and I think just like I try at least now not to hold so much on like, oh, but what if this opportunity doesn't come to me because someone thinks X? Well, maybe I don't want to be there anyway. And I think that's the thing that we have to decide for ourselves is like, do you really want to be the person bending and shifting and shaping to everyone else's whims? Like, how much joy does it really bring you? And I think that's a lot of what we've dissected across topics and themes on the show. So.
I was riding over here and in the car, I saw this person. I don't know how they identify, but this person was white. And this person had shoulder length hair. It was a side part. It was flipped over and brushed over, you know, mm-hmm. a good little brush blowout situation. This person had a beard, 5 o'clock shadow beard. Mm-hmm. This person then had some dangling earrings on. They were wearing a man's suit jacket. And they had a female blouse, you know, clearly something that you saw. This was in this department store section. Mm-hmm. This was in another section. Mm-hmm. Great. Pants and shoes. And they had their bag tucked under their arm. And I said, wow, look at that. In the middle of the day, Manhattan, mm-hmm. just walking around. Daylight. Right. And I loved it. I loved it. But I also knew in that moment, oh, that's a white person now. Do you understand what I'm saying? Yeah. There is a difference. There is a difference, because if that had been a black person, and if that had been a black femme boy or black masculine female or girl, like, there would be some other confusion and like all these eyebrow raises and stuff like that. So to me, it's a different conversation for us, because people see your blackness before they see your queerness oftentimes. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And regardless of where you are on that spectrum, you still black.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Or you still a person of color. So there is then that. And I think that for so long, one of the reasons why we have a retard when it comes to the conversation, it's because we have had to deal with that part first. You know what I'm saying? We're now just kind of unpacking this other things of identity, you know, and sexuality. When I look at my family, it's a different thing. My family has always supported me. It used to be, oh, you know, he a little sweet. Oh, you know, you know what I'm saying? But that boy be good. You know, he be doing that tap dance and he be doing that good thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a level of performance that actually allowed the acceptance of your femininity,
mm-hmm.
in different ways. So it's a lot of different things. You know, if you was feminine, but you could do the hair, then there was nothing to talk about. Mm. If you was feminine, you was good and you know, you could design their clothes, or, you know, you was making their wigs or whatever. Like, it was always, if you could do something for me, there was an exchange.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It was transactional. So it's interesting. I think we're in a new day right now. But when it comes to the industry, I always tell young people, like, I've taught and I have mentees, and I always tell them, it's about what you want. What is it that you want? I knew that when I was coming into this game, that I didn't want to be pigeonholed by anybody or anything, because there was so long when I was here in New York that I wasn't cast in shows, not only for my queerness, but because of my size,
mm-hmm.
and because of my color.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you're the big dark-skinned boy. You know what I'm saying? When I auditioned for Man of La Mancha on Broadway some years back, I went specifically to the dance call because I wasn't a singer. Like, I had my musical book and I've studied opera and vocal training. I can sing, grew up in the church singing and the choir and all that other kind of stuff, done tons of musicals, made a living at it. But when you stand next to someone like let's say a Michael Kilgore, that's a friend of mine. We don't have the same kind of, Michael sings down. You know what I'm saying? I can sing. He sang. You know what I mean? So it's like in that same kind of a conversation, it's like, oh, let me back up a little bit. So I went to the dance call because I knew I could dance. I know I can dance. People look at me and I'm like, oh my God, you really can dance. I'm like, it says it on the resume, but y'all don't believe it. Okay. But the director told me, he said, Nico, I'm going to have to cut you now. It was down to five people. It was the last five people. And he said, I'm going to have to cut you now. I said, why? He said, because I'm going to want to look at you.
Oh.
I said, huh? He said, you're going to distract from the lead. This is for an ensemble audition. And because you are moving and you are doing these things, I want to look at you. I'm like, look at that big boy. Look at him. He's just going.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have the whole thing of size. You know what I'm saying? And we deal with that in the community all the time. You don't know fats, no femmes. You know, so it's even within our ciphers, it's a lot of different. It's, the conversation is there. I do say that I don't hear it as much. I don't hear it as much.
It's changing a little.
Right. But I'm also not online like I used to be.
Well, there's that. There's a difference.
There is.
No, I think that was actually a really good segue into part of the next thing. I think as Black queer people, image shows up in so many things professionally and personally. We're either too Black, too femme, too slim, too tall, too short, too fat, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you talked a lot about the focus on your image in your work. How do you kind of work through that? How are you navigating that? What choices are you making in your life professionally or personally to combat that?
My choices are honor how I feel that day. Literally, honor how I feel that day. I don't feel restriction and all of that. When I'm thinking about like my character, for example, like when I'm playing Uncle Clifford, Uncle Clifford definitely lends, you know, she lends toward the feminine, you know? But even still, she is very conscious and uses pronouns she and her, you know, but she's very conscious of, I know I have all of these parts of my body. I have male parts. T.S. Madison just made this post. It was like, what did she say? I have an announcement. I have an announcement. I'm a woman. She says, I'm a woman with male parts. Wow. With male parts. Three male parts. You know what I'm saying? Wow. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. It's one of the reasons for me, even in my portrayal of Uncle Clifford, that I am open and I wanted certain things to be a part of the conversation. I wanted, you know, it's a show, P-Valley. We're dealing with the strip club. We deal with our bodies, you know, and it's not about objectifying or sexualizing the women's bodies, the men's body. There's an equal opportunity across the platform for all of these bodies to be used and seen as art and the work that they do. So when it comes down to Uncle Clifford, there was, to me, it's false to then shy and to have this level of shame. I had read these comments from season one, episode five, when Uncle Clifford and Lil Murder have their first, you know, physical encounter, and Lil Murder sleep on a couch.
Okay.
Right, and it's the morning after the afterglow.
The girls are living now. I remember giving like, there's no show doing, what is happening? What am I watching? Oh my God.
You're watching Truth, hopefully.
Oh my God.
We are really, 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 really working hard to like, to depict what the truth of the situations are, you know, in terms of how it goes down, the scenarios, because it's important for us to have that reflection. Mm-hmm. It's important to add a reflection and not have some sanitized version there. Right. But that moment that I was just talking about was when Uncle Clifford is looking in the mirror at herself, you know, and then slips her wigs on and, you know, she's looking, and there were a row of people that were talking about, oh, she's ashamed of her body. Oh, look how she's hiding. Hmm. And I was like, no. That ain't it. No, we loving on the handles. We was thinking about, oh, he kissed it there. He kissed it there and touched it there. That's very Vera from Seven Guitars and August Wilson. That's my theater days coming in. Oh, he touched me there and he kissed me there.
Yeah.
So you're like, you know, that was what
I'm thinking about. Because I'm going to start using that for myself.
Listen.
I could say, touch me there. I could kiss me there. When I go back to Damon and Jordan, I'm going to be giving very much. How was your night last night? Oh, he touched me there. He kissed me there. Yes.
I can already hear it.
I'm going to need that reference. I got to go back and watch.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, you don't have to be ashamed of yourself. And when you love yourself, that makes other people love you more, I think. So in my career, I'm very... I am conscious of what I'm doing. For example, like when I was on Shameless and I played a gay pastor, they actually asked me like, are you okay playing a gay person? Hmm. And I was like, yeah. Like what's the, well, like, it was so strange. I was like, are y'all trying to make him like some pedophile? Like is he the killer? Like what's the issue? Oh, no, Nico, nothing like that. You know, he's a pastor. And I was like, okay. We are pastors too. Mm-hmm. Just because you gay don't mean you don't know the word. Because baby, I know the word. Mm. I'm up in that word every day. That's the only way that made it through. You understand what I mean?
So I'm seeing there's a lot of parallels with the characters you play and just your you.
Well, you have, as an actor, you have to bring some of yourself to the role. There's the conversation of where do they meet? And where the character takes you beyond. Uncle Clifford definitely takes me way beyond Nico's comfort zones. You know what I'm saying? But there's things that I feel that Nico brings to Uncle Clifford that grounds her. There were things with Shameless, you know, that character, or even in This Is Us on NBC. I remember playing This Is Us, and sexuality wasn't talked about, but the character was a choreographer, the dance team of all the girls. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. I'm so nervous. And I was like, Nico, why are you nervous? Like, you literally, first of all, I was still working at the hotel at the time, and I was still teaching. I wasn't still teaching. I had just left teaching here in New York a year previously, where I was teaching literally fourth, fifth, and sixth grade girls.
Wow.
And I was like, Just do what you know to
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
Do you understand what I'm saying? Just yeah. that's it. And as a person, you speaking gospel right there. Just show up mm-hmm. every day. Just show up for yourself, for your job, for your kids, for your lover. Show up. For me, I had to talk myself into that. In the moment, I was outside and I was like, "What are you doing? You tripping? Yeah. Here we go." And so I just went in and did it, kind of like I ran my class.
Well, yeah, it was imposter syndrome.
There you go. Exactly. Exactly. And then there was no conversation then about, oh, is he gay? Is he not? But for me, I had made that decision. And those are the roles that I wanted to just show our range of, you know, everybody, you can be quote unquote sweet or have sugar in your tank, but you still can beat a motherfucker's ass. You can still entice this kind of a motherfucker. You can still do like all the things. You don't have to be restricted to one thing.
When you say sweet and sugar in your tank, that brings me back to my childhood. Mm-hmm. My black grandmother, I remember being asked, like, "You ain't funny, is you?"
Mm-hmm.
And I was funny, I guess. But I was also like, I was like, no, you know, I didn't know how to answer that. And I also was dealing with like, this is her way of asking, like, am I gay?
How old were you?
I was still, I think I was college, but still, you know, in the moment where I wanted to respect my elders, but mm-hmm. also in the moment where it was like, grandma, it's quiet for you. And so I just said, you know, like anytime I went out, is it girls? Is it guys? She would ask like those kind of questions. Like, what is the composition of the friends that you're hanging out with? And I would just be like, it's girls and guys. And it was, mm-hmm. but it's given girl, you are trying it, and just made me push away from the family.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Did that do that for you?
I mean, I definitely like triggered some like memories in the past. I remember like when I was very young, I was probably around like 10 or something like that. And I was with my aunt. I just finished like a basketball game that I was forced to play. And some woman that came up to me was just like, "Oh, like your eyelashes are so long. Like are you funny or something like that?" And mm-hmm. I knew exactly what she was saying. She said that in front of like one of my aunts,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and who also, you know, had comments about my sexuality. So it was like, as a 10-year-old, you're sitting there like, no, like mm-hmm. I know that I have to be in this environment for the next eight years,
right?
And I have to survive it. And it's when you ask the original question about like sort of self-image and how you're always so hypersensitive or hyper aware mm-hmm. of how you're presenting yourself, like. It's ingrained like in childhood. And when I think about the span of my life, like I spent 2/3 of my life like just hiding parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, like it wasn't until maybe I was like a preteen that I started doing a countdown until I could go to college. Wow. That I was just like, I need to get out of this environment. I need to get into an environment that I know for a fact is more open.
Mm-hmm.
And then I can be free. And then I went to school and I still didn't feel free and I still felt trapped. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I was like, well, maybe I need to go to a bigger city and I'm going to move to New York City or LA and then I'm going to be myself. And then it actually happened when I turned 21.
Was it because of the city or was it because of the personal mindset?
It was because I was away from like the expectations of mm-hmm. family. And then I feel like it was away from the expectations of like a social environment. Mm-hmm. When you go to, I thought that when I was away from family, that it would all disappear. But I realized that when I got in school, we're still kids and they're still teasing and they're still badgering and they're still isolating and ostracizing and all of that. And I was just like, oh, I don't want this to be my experience here. Like, I want to enjoy it. I don't want to feel like I'm on the margins of campus.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I actually moved to New York where I was just like, oh, and I work in marketing. So I'm like, everybody's gay. And, you know, I was just it was the first time where I was not everybody, but, you know, it was the first time where I felt like it was not weird mm-hmm. to be gay. There were affinity groups at the company that I was working at for all the gay people to come out and go to happy hours. And I, for the first time in my life, I felt like I could start becoming who I was. And it's kind of a mind fuck because at 30, you know, at 32, I'm just like, am I really who I was supposed to be? Like, who would I have been if I was given the opportunity to freely express myself since childhood? So when people say be authentic, I'm just like, I don't even know what that is. Because, like, I spent 2/3 of my life pretending to be something else. and the last 10 years to 11 years exploring who I would be without guardrails.
Well, you know what? What would happen if we all stop pretending? And we say that on the show. What would happen?
Exactly.
You know, you, like, sky's the fucking limit.
That's really why. I say every literally day by day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Day by day. You know, I think it's interesting, like, in the culture when people, even when they say, like, oh, you can't be verse. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, huh? Like, what you feel this day is what you feel.
Right.
You know, and you have to honor that. I remember my grandmother, she told me, I was actually on the phone, I was 18, and I was on the phone talking to my then boyfriend at the time. And we had a relationship. It was going for a while. You know, he had got me a little teddy bear. Ooh, you know what I'm saying?
Sookie now.
You know, he had got me a couple of necklaces and shit. Come on. He got me a rainbow necklace with the little beads and a little, the pink triangle. Now, my ass is from Detroit. You out in Detroit right now, so you
He's in Chicago.
Well, you in Chicago, Midwest. across the lake. So we knew house music.
Yeah.
Down. But I ain't know nothing about no rainbow. I ain't know nothing about no pink triangle. I had no idea.
What that meant.
I had no idea. I knew I was gay. I knew about gay clubs, all the things.
Yeah.
I rocked this damn necklace.
I ride diamonds on my
neck. It was diamonds on my neck. And I was like, and then somebody's like, Nico, you gay?
Okay, the directness
right now.
But shift the wig.
What was crazy is that I had the girls that was in high school with me, like, you know, and Kendra and Tiffany, and I was like, he ain't gay, he just funny. You know? And I was like, wait, I didn't even have time to answer. Well, I didn't say anything. So then when my grandmother, I was talking to my boyfriend on the phone, we talking, going out, what we gonna do? You know, nothing special. Like, we was going, all of us, the group of kids was going to the party.
Yeah.
Get off the phone. I was cleaning her house at the time. I was dusting underneath the dining room table and dusting the chandelier. You know,
yeah.
Just things that your grandchildren do. I got off the phone and she said, come here. She said, sit down. And I went in the living room. I sat down. She said, there's one thing about it. Mm-mm. But is you gay? And I fell out laughing.
That didn't gag you? I would have been clutching my pearls.
Was that a nervous laugh?
It was an absolute nervous laugh because I was just like, how the hell do you come out your face, old lady, and just say that to somebody? And I was like, well, shit, she's so bold to ask like this.
She want to know.
Yes. And I was like,
right,
yeah, grandma. And she said, well, it's one thing about it. I always knew yous was a gay. Ooh. That's what she said. I always knew yous was a gay.
Come on now.
Okay.
Plural S.
Yes. And then she said, because it's one thing about it, your Uncle Bill, my brother, he was a gay. Hmm. Uncle Bill had died. He had died some years previously. And Uncle Bill has a son. And Uncle Bill was always a part of the family. Uncle Bill had these bangles.
Come on now.
And he would make sound everywhere he went. That's how I knew Uncle Bill was there. And I remember as a child, sometimes one day at Thanksgiving, he reached over and was getting like the peas or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I heard those bangles. Mm. And I remember leaning a little bit away because I was like, oh, if I get too close, then they're going to think that I'm gay.
Mm-hmm. By association,
yeah. Right? But the fact that my grandmother said that my brother was gay, and I was like, oh, he was. And she said, yeah, I always knew you was gay. I told Sandra.
What? I can't help but sit here and because I'm sure someone has said this to you if you had your own thoughts about it, but I'm drawing the parallels between, like, Uncle Bill was the Uncle Clifford.
Yes.
In your life.
Absolutely.
Before Uncle Clifford came absolutely. Along. Wow.
There's homage to Uncle Bill.
Come on
Uncle
now.
Clifford. I'm very intentional as an artist as the things I do. There are people that I've seen, that I've encountered, that other people have told me about. Uncle Clifford is an amalgamation of Katori's parents and different people in her life.
For the folks that don't know who Katori is.
Katori Hall is the creator and the showrunner for P-Valley. Yes. She created the play that was called Pussy Valley back in 2009 when we first started this project back in New York. And then we moved on doing workshops with it. No one wanted to produce the show. because they thought that it was too risque. They said that no actors would be able to portray these characters, and they could only do it with dancers. And then we did it again with dancers. And then they were like, oh no, they need to be stronger actors. And she said, I told you, it's all about the story. This is a show about story and these people. The dance is a part of it, because we don't go into the story and the hearts of these people. She wanted to really dive into marginalized communities. That's who she is as a writer. All of her work, she's won the Olivier, she's Tony nominated. She wrote Tina Turner's story on Teen on Broadway.
Oh my goodness.
She has the Pulitzer Prize. We won the Pulitzer for Hot Wing King. It's a gay black family drama. All these, it's six men.
I wanted to see that.
It was so awesome. It was the first time that I, as an actor, was able to be on stage in an authentic space as a black man and as a black gay man. And it was like, oh shit. I had a breakdown in the middle of rehearsals, because I was like, you've been fighting to get up on Broadway all these years, but now is the time. You know, the world wasn't necessarily ready at that point. So sometimes they say God's no, rejection is the protection, you know? And I felt like my hold back, not yet, was always about fortifying my faith in myself, my abilities, so that I don't have to question. There's a lot of questions that come at me for the roles that I play or what I could play. Mm-hmm. And I don't, in my heart of hearts, I don't give a fuck.
Yes. Love that. That is channeling our brother Damon.
Damon, you feel that same way?
That's Damon.
I don't give a fuck.
How did you get there?
You know, I was listening into what you all were saying. Most of my adult life has really been centered around the search for truth, honesty, directness. And we were talking about coming out. And I remember the moment that made me come out was the night before I moved to New York. I lived in Boston for a year before I moved to New York. And I was moving to New York. And I remember my mom was on the phone with me. And she was like, oh, when are you going to have like kids or something? Like one of those questions that like you're saying one thing, but I know what you're really asking me. And I remember I called my dad and I said, I'm moving to New York. I'm not going to let them live another lie. I'm gay. Tell mom, she'll deal with it. okay. And for me, it was at that moment, it's just like, this is what it is. If you like it, great. If you don't, fuck it. And I think that's, sometimes that's hard. I think that's a binary of experiences and thoughts that like I try not to be as literal on all the time. And as I've grown from like that space in my life, thinking about the complication of people and what all the bullshit they're bringing to the decisions and how they treat you, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But purely it became for me to live as me. And if you don't like it, you can't be here. And I don't care what title you have. And I think some people give so much deference to parent, sister, brother, friend, whatever the thing is, but really it's just about like, I'm going to be a person. I'm going to surround myself with people that support the person that I'm trying to be, and anyone else can not be here. And I really don't care what structure of society has told me that you have to be here. You have to love such and such. And like, luckily I've had an amazing experience with my family and they've accepted me and so on. So like, there's just been a lot of growth over that time, but it purely, like succinctly, choosing me.
Yeah. One of the things you just said about having a positive experience with family, a lot of us don't necessarily and have not had the space where it has been okay, where you have been accepted, you've been told and poured into in a certain way. Mm-hmm. I was one of those people who was. Even though things were not necessarily talked about, and I used the term sweet earlier, it reminds me, have you read that book, Sweet Tea? I forget the author, Sweet Tea, it is a culmination of stories of Southern Black gayness, and it uses the metaphor of the sweet tea and about talking about homophobia and things like that. It's really, really, really beautiful. But I really wanted to express and make a platform for the space where there is love. There is love where, you know, there are the people who throw their children in the garbage can, like we saw on Empire, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. To Jussie Smollett's character when he was a baby, mm-hmm. you know? And then Lee Daniels came out and said how that was a part of his story, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me. Nope. But for me, I had I had definitely tragic situations happening to me in Detroit growing up. Unfortunately, I thought that those things that were tragic, I thought that that was normal. I thought that everybody was having knife fights. I thought everybody was getting, you know, held up. I thought everybody had to learn how to fight a certain way. Not necessarily the case once I got out of the city, moving away from home. That's why I always say it's something big and beautiful about that stretch, mm-hmm. just as a person. But I wanted to make sure that there was space for people to see who do have queer children, that you can love them and that they can be just as formidable and responsible in society and loved. I wanted to make sure that there was a space where we can have conversation between the heterosexual community and the homosexual community, like and the straight men, the non-binary people, the queer people, the femme people, all like. That's where Big L, that's where Diamond, that's where all of those kind of characters come in to play Corbin with Uncle Clifford and seeing those heavy relationships, you know. I just think that it's really important that sometimes, that's why it says P-Valley, it'll say Chuckalisa, Mississippi. Chuckalisa is a fictitious place, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that's meant to represent the different cities along the Bible Belt in the Dirty Delta. Mm. But it says Chuckalisa, Mississippi, yesterday, today, and tomorrow.
Work.
Because there's what we represent is what we come from, who we are today, but also here's a glimpse of what it could be.
Yeah.
What it could be. When I get asked to go to clubs and things like that for appearances and stuff, I'm coming as Nico. Nico is more than enough, my dear. More than enough, my love. I doubt that you could handle all the things that Nico could bring.
Listen, but the way you walked in the studio today, I said, right now, we got the right one, the one, not the two.
But if you're gonna, I'm not coming as Uncle Clifford because Uncle Clifford is a character. Mm-hmm. She represents many different people. So if you want to hire a non-binary person, you should call one of my non-binary sisters or brothers or mm-hmm. thems. Yes. You should, because they deserve the platform because that's how they walk through the world every single day. And you're not going to make me disrespect that, or mm-hmm. I'm going to make you respect that. You can hire me and you can hire Saucy Santana. You yes. can hire me and you can hire Big Frida. You mm-hmm. can do all of these things. There's not just room. There is more than room at the table for all of us. See, we sitting here at the table, D, you over there in Chicago, there's two spots still waiting, and then there's room over here for another two. You know, the dining room table always got that leaf in it that you can open up, make bigger when the greens come out. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's time for the crab ball. Like, let's go. Let's all eat.
You know, like, going back to Uncle Clifford, you know, the character is non-binary, lives in her truth unapologetically, and I just want to know from your experiences, Nico the actor, you know, what has been the reception to that character? Has there been any like surprisingly positive like feedback that really stuck with you in terms of how the community and society and just the public is reacting to that character on TV?
I did not know that this was going to, I knew that the show was going to be big.
Work.
Mm-hmm. I knew that.
You had a feeling?
No, I had a fact.
Ooh,
I had a fact front, and that was from when we did the full production in Minnesota at Mixed Blood Theater. There was a situation that happened at the end of Act One, and this happened more than once. And it's a theater, so not a lot of us go to theater. And I say that we need to support our theater and our stories that are being told out there. And that's the only way things continue to be amplified. So
yes, ma'am.
Go to the theater, y'all. See your people, mm-hmm. see your stories, because mm-hmm. that matters. But there were a group, maybe 5 to 7 of us, these are black and brown folks, they had come to the show. In the show, there's live pole dancing, literally, in the show. So the women and myself are up on the pole doing these monologues and talking and like literally living and dancing while you're going through it.
Wow.
And that's the thing I think that started to take people by surprise, that I thought this was about a strip show, but wait, you making me feel something while you're in, I'm not supposed to feel nothing. You a stripper. Mm-hmm. You just non-binary. I don't know what you is. You up in this wig. I don't know what you, but you making me feel something. So I knew that we had something there. And then at the end of Act One, there was a fight that broke out on the stage. It's scripted every time, you know. Look Tony at you. Said, you see?
The girl.
You see?
Tony said, wait a damn minute.
CD, it's a good thing that you're out in Chicago because this one over here like to start trouble.
I'm used to it by now.
Okay. So there was a fight that breaks out in at the end of Act One. And the brothers that were with these in this group, they got up and started running. Was like, oh, shit. Oh, nigga, shit. Fuck. Like, they start running around up on in the audience. And we were underneath the bleachers holding, waiting for the blackout to happen, for the lights to go out so we can exit and go to the dressing room. Very much theater. Yeah. You know, smoke and mirrors making it happen. But when they got up and started running, thinking that it was a real fight, like they needed to get out the club. And his girlfriend was like, boy, sit down. It's a play. It's a play. And he was like, what? Nigga, they ain't fucking up in a fight. Oh, shit.
He was so into it.
He was so into it. And I said, got him. Mm-hmm. Got him. Gotcha. I knew that this show was going to be all that it is, and it is just beginning. Mm-hmm. And I feel that because we don't always get our truth. We don't always get our fat back. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? We don't always get the grease with our meat. And you're going to get this grease in me. And
come on now.
You're going to get it all. Do you understand what I'm saying? You're going to get it all with P-Valley. Yeah. You know?
Listen, opening scene, season two, started. I need you to come deep inside.
Yeah, that's right. But don't hit them all.
But don't hit them all.
At least not yet.
Yeah.
Because I want you to every once in a while.
Listen. When I saw the car watching, I said, let me pour another drink.
But what people don't get is like everything is so intentional because that's a Crown Royal cape. That cape is made out of Crown Royal bags.
I didn't pee.
Yes.
I got to rewatch.
That purple and gold, it is Crown Royal.
Yes.
And it's that because it's the pandemic. All of us been smoking and we've been drinking. We quarantined thick. And I was like, you know, Uncle Clifford probably been dealing with some depression. And you see in episode two, she's like hollering, like, look, I ain't had no dick in 5 months. Okay. It's all going, I'm still living with my grandmother. My birthday is coming up. I'm about to be 40.
Try 15 years.
Okay. That's what she said. That's what
she said. Mother Loretta Devine is gathering me.
She said, give a bitch a hug. Because, you know, you needed that touch. You needed that touch. And that's the stuff that Katori laced in the show, because it's really the truth. But I am surprised at how many describe them, hyper masculine heterosexual men are vocal about supporting Uncle Clifford.
All right, now
that I am surprised and proud of. That's the thing that makes me feel, going back to our very first question about the progression of where society is. I know I am one person and I am playing one character, but to have the heads of these big football people and Deion Sanders and Snoop Dogg, and to have all these brothers reaching out and vocal about supporting the show, I think that means something.
It does. Absolutely.
Do you understand what I mean? Yeah. I feel sometimes as a culture, we only give us credit. You know, well, we don't need nobody else. We don't need, and that's not necessarily true. And it's not about needing someone, but it is nice when it is there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is nice sometimes to have support. Yes, you can fight your own battles. Yes, you can open your own door. You can cook your own meal. But baby, don't it feel good when somebody do it for you?
All right now.
Every once in a while, when somebody rub your foot. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, you know. So I am surprised about that in the most pleasant of ways. I did not know also that telling the truth in my acting, I knew it, but I'm feeling it. How it's changing some lives. Mm. People are telling me their coming out stories or their stories about. I've had a lot of women. It's interesting because. Sometimes, like on my social media, people have some gay people have said, Nico, you don't have enough gay shit on your page. I'm like, huh? There we go again. I ain't gay enough for y'all. I don't know.
I'm on the page.
Right.
It's my page.
Like, what else do I gotta do? What else do I gotta do? But I am aware that there are a lot of women that follow me. And a lot of women have expressed either attraction to Uncle Clifford. So when y'all talk about DMs and shit like that, like, mm-hmm. right, I get a lot of more women that are hitting up Uncle Clifford and like, you know, and I'm like, this is so interesting.
That is.
And you know what it is, mm-hmm. but okay. I'm not mad. Whatever you like it, I love it. You
listen,
like it,
they, the devil you know is better than the devil you don't know.
Well, so say that.
They rather like know what they're getting themselves into and someone who's living their authentic truth than to be like, I don't know what's going over here, mm-hmm. going on over here. But I think that that's got to be part of the reason.
I could go for that.
Yeah.
I could go for that. Yeah. You know, but you know, people are really making the character, they're opening up and talking to their children. That Halloween when everyone was dressing like and throwing pink parties and dressing like the characters and Lizzo. And I was just like, whoa. Yeah. I didn't, you know, my sister, Nafisha Nicholson, Alphonse's wife. She told me, she was like, Nico, just wait. People going to be dressing up like you. And I was like, ain't nobody going to be dressing up like Uncle Clifford. Get out of here. But she saw something that I didn't see because I was in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, I think that even just thinking about this entire episode and the topic that we're talking about, which is like representation of Black queer characters, it sucks that so many production companies and studios and media distribution companies feel like it's an actual risk to tell the true stories, the true Black stories. But I'm so happy that we're able to see a story like P-Valley where a character like Uncle Clifford can be humanized in a way mm-hmm. that we can see not only, you know, just like the visual representation of Uncle Clifford, but like the fact that she's compassionate, the fact that she is loving, the fact that she is a boss. Like, and I think that's the reason why people are gravitating towards it, because they're seeing the human
yes.
in Uncle Clifford. And I think that overall, like that's what it's going to take, I think, to move society forward. Mm-hmm. And the more that we say, oh, well, I don't know if there's going to be a profitable story to tell for our business, it's like, no, actually, like the spectrum of humanity is so broad, we haven't even scratched the surface. Hello. And once we start uncovering that, people will move towards it. Mm-hmm. And we've seen it with all these investments in like these Black productions, and they've gone on to be extremely successful. Mm-hmm. Like Black Panther, mm-hmm. that was a milestone for the Black community. And a lot of companies thought that that would be a super risky thing to do because they were like, oh, I don't know how this is gonna perform the global box office, because like, I mean, Americans might care about like a Black storyline, but like, do they care about that in Sweden? They don't know. One of the most profitable, like, you know, movies to be there. And so I'm just very, very happy that we're able to have this conversation with you, that you can talk about your experience portraying that character that's becoming bigger than, you know, probably what you actually, it seems like you knew that Uncle Clifford was going to be this big, actually.
That's what I'm saying. Like, being outside, it's bigger than what I thought. Mm. Or physically experiencing it.
But I do, because I know we're about to wrap up, but I can't let us leave, because I do want to hear on the flip side, disappointments. Some things that have disappointed you about how the character has been received and about the show in general. Has there been anything like that? Like, I really want to know, what is there anything out there that you've consumed and read or what have you that's like made you like, damn, they don't get it?
I was expecting a lot of, oh, here we go with another man in the wig.
Okay.
I was expecting that. And I remember specifically on my own social media, I had unfollowed a lot of comedians that I happened to have found. You know, you know how people get added to your timeline through somehow, somewhere. Yeah. You know, like, did I actually follow this person? You know, like I unfollowed a lot of people, and I unfollowed a lot of people creatively, because when I'm in the zone, I don't want to be influenced by other things. But one thing that I knew is that I wanted to bring this humanity to the character and to the world.
Yeah.
I've been playing this character since 2009.
Work.
Okay.
So when it got to
that
point,
game, bitch, she is tenured.
There you go. So because of the fact that I had space in between, the character taught me so much about our community. The character taught me so much about the dangers. When the director from the play originally wanted me to shave my beard, it was like, okay, Nico, it's time to shave your beard. Or, oh, Nico, it's time to go get your nails done. I was like, oh, okay, what are we doing? Oh, no, we're going to just send you to the nail salon. They're making press-ons? No, they're going to put on the acrylics. And I was like, we got a problem. Mm-hmm. We got a problem. One, creatively, the play takes place more than one day, more than 1 week. Clifford would have gotten her nails done a couple times. So where's the change? We got to be able to flip that. We got to be able to flip the wig. Then on top of that, it was like, I don't live here in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I was taking public transportation. We on the subway and things like that. There is a true danger for non-binary people in this world walking around here, right? That allowed me, one, as the actor, to feel and digest that. You know, what is it that we go through? What do the members of our community go through that have a physical appearance that is other than what you think I should be presenting? Okay. So now I got that. So then I had to have the conversation of, well, because if I have to fuck somebody up, because I am from Detroit, if I got to fuck somebody up, I may not get to the show on time. What you gonna do? Oh, I didn't think about all that. I didn't think about all that. Shave your beard. I don't think Uncle Clifford would shave her beard. For what? I gotta let you know, one, this is not a drag show that you come into. This is not drag that Uncle Clifford is doing. In the sense of drag, everybody is in drag in terms of clothes, like RuPaul says, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. But this is not a drag show. This mm-hmm. is not a show. This is who she is. So there's a story behind how the beard got to be how it is. So the things that were disappointing to me, I think, were more so on the cultural aspects of the show. Not knowing about that we come from root work is a part of our culture. People thinking that, oh, it's voodoo, or that's that demon stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm like, but you the same person that got black eyed peas and aluminum foil in your pocketbook. You the same woman that won't put your pocketbook on the floor. You the same person that's spitting on the broom because somebody swept your foot or throwing salt over your shoulder. You the same person that's using Palo Santo to cleanse your air. Those are all things that come from who we are. Where we come from. And I think it's amazing that so many of us don't know that. You know, you do it, but you don't know it. And I think it's great to be a part of a show that actually is educating our culture, that's highlighting all of us.
No, seriously.
Literally.
Listen, it's very much of like, wow.
Do you understand what I'm saying? And like, for me, I understand the platform that I am on and that the show has. And I don't know who it is that runs your page, but somebody.
The three of us.
Okay, well, one of y'all had reached out to me.
It was me.
Oh, okay. It was Tony.
Right, that reached out to me. And I'm going to be honest with you. I had not seen the podcast. Mm-hmm. I had not seen the podcast. And I literally went on the page and I watched and I was just like, oh, this is the community. I don't know about the community.
Of Black and Crip.
Absolutely. Why I don't know about the community, and why won't I go? Mm. Why would I not? So there's a lot of my team, my PR team, mm-hmm. they know what it is. I'm always consistently charging them. Okay, you can try to get me over there, but that's real nice and cute. That's real nice and cute. But where are the black people? Where are the queer people? We got to have, there has to be a mix. There has to be a mix. I believe in my ascension as people getting to know me. It ain't no different from what I've been doing since day one. Do you understand what I'm saying? From when I was doing them church plays, when I was doing the improv shows in high school and in college. And I feel like sometimes we oftentimes have to feel we have to become something else. So those negative things that I have felt about people not getting the culture of the show, I just hold fast. Mm-hmm. I hold fast and keep pressing and keep doing what I do. And I hope that you guys keep doing what you do. Your numbers will grow. You know what I'm saying? It will continue to resonate, make the ripples and the waves, because people will feel you. You know, if that's what I wanted to do, even by coming here, let me jump my big ass up in this and make some ripples. You know what I'm saying? And like, for real, amplify, share light, share like half conversations. I was like, oh, is this gonna be nervous? Is this gonna be raunchy? And I was like, but you just came from Angela Yee and Lip Service. So the girls over there, like, they good, but how could I not go there? How could I go there and not come here? Do you understand what I'm saying? And I think a lot of times those respectability politics, Nico don't subscribe to. As long as you know what you're doing, as long as you really got something to say, because I can talk.
But you have a lot to say.
I do, bitch.
You have stories to share.
I do, bitch.
And it's giving very much of, like, I'm so grateful.
I'm grateful to be here, for real.
Yeah.
This was a great conversation. Thank you so much for coming and talking to us. Like, you're this welcome. Was, like, so insightful. And I felt like you just kind of, like, it feels like it's just, like, a fourth extension of the show. At one point, you asked Damon a question. I said, come on. He better be moderating.
No, because
I
want you to be included. You know what I'm saying? You know, you can't just be cute over there in Chicago all by yourself. You know what I'm saying?
No, we really appreciate that. So, like, let the listeners and for the viewers who are watching it on YouTube, let them know, like, where they can find out more about Nico, more about P-Valley, and just anything that you have coming up that you want to share with the audience.
Well, all my social handles are All Day Nico, because I don't change for nobody. That's how that came to be. I was like, I don't change for nobody unless you give me a check. and that's on Twitter, Instagram, and not on Facebook. I mean, my Facebook got hacked. I got to get back in there and all that kind of stuff. You know, y'all be trying to get me. there are a lot, I will say to the people, there are a lot of fan pages out there, like the official Uncle Clifford page and... There's some other ones. That's not me. So people that are going and paying for these little DM drops and promotional stuff, like, that's at your own risk, because that's not me. They just taking all the shit that I put up and copying it. I've told them about it. I told them about it. I told them about it. I'm going to keep doing me. And I'm going to leave that at that. I appreciate the love. Just don't lie to the people.
Okay.
That's my only thing. Say it's a fan page. Yeah. And I'm good. Listen. Just say it's a fan page, because I don't want people thinking that that's me.
Right.
There's somebody that put a picture out and was like, oh, you at this panel. Nico, where you at? I didn't see you on the call. What call? We got you. And I'm like, oh, you know what? This is the thing, because I'm going to tell you, this is the thing that makes people that start to get like in the light or whatever, and whatever this celebrity thing or that BS is, that's what makes people feel more cold and more distant. You know, because people take advantage of that. I'm too smart, I'm too savvy, and I'm also too real. But what I do know, God forbid, before I become or need to become more distant, I need to be with my people. Oh. So I had to get in and have some chitlins with you now.
Listen, I'm glad that we were able to have chitlins together, damn it.
Listen, and if you want the real Uncle Clifford, you're going to have to tune in on Starz.
Yes.
Season 2 is in premieres. Thank you so much, Nico, for joining us for the conversation.
You're welcome.
And that is all the time that we have this week. This season, we're raising money for the Ali Forney Center, an organization committed to protecting LGBTQIA+ youths from homelessness and empowering them to live independently. One of the ways you can help is by joining our Surface Level Small Talk conversation on Tuesday, July 26th. Small Talk is a live audio platform where you can join an intimate discussion with us. 100% of the tips that we receive will go directly to the Ali Forney Center. For details on how to RSVP, for the small talk discussion, visit surfacelevelpodcast.com, and remember, stay curious.